really kind of focusing on some of this and moving to some more of the specifics when you feel as though you've covered.
I'll keep it shorter. The first point was you asked Dr. Valerie Starkman and your assistant professor and your mentee at that time to house it for you during the summer. This request was inappropriate and placed a junior colleague in an awkward position as a result of this unprofessional demand, as well as all the poor interaction with Dr. Starkman. We had to remove you as her mentor. You have continued to complain about this and have refused to take responsibilities for your own part in your removal as Dr. Starkman's mentor. I did ask because of I just wanted to have a backup in case we had to travel to Germany. We have horses, we have dogs, we have had a cat. And Dr. Starkman actually, I had a very, very friendship actually relationship with her in that time. And she said one time, you know, that she house sat for, dog sat for colleagues, and if I ever needed somebody. So she offered that, and I just thought I'll ask and check in whether she might be available to house it. She wrote that that she called it a demand. I never demanded. I just asked her, and it never came to the house meeting. We had to remove her as mentor. You did not take responsibility, and kept asking about. I asked for the reason why I was removed as her mentor. I was actually being a part of the mentorship advisory team, so I thought I was very well qualified, and it didn't make sense why I was removed as mentor. I was until this letter, I did not know why I was removed.
Okay.
So, and also like John Lohman said, nobody has ever heard of any disciplinary actions because of house sitting request. So I thought that was the next thing is said.
So in this particular case, she was your mentee.
Actually, at that time she wasn't. Her contract started in August.
Okay.
She was hired for the fall semester. She really was not my mentee at that time yet.
Okay.
It was not even secure. It was just said that Dr. Fuller would. I forgot we hired somebody else during that time too, so she would mentor so and so, and I would mentor Valerie Stackman.
Yeah, sometimes if there's the mentor mentee relationship, you know, it suggests a power difference.
Yeah, and that's okay to say that, you know, you shouldn't do or something, but it was never articulated to me, and it didn't even occur.
Okay.
It was just something that I checked in with her. She said her now wife, Jenna, was looking for a job on a farm, and I thought, like, I thought we pay Jenna because she missed, because of a few days, she missed her farm job. They moved here in early June, and the farm job would have started on June 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually thought I would do her a favor at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
On October 7th, you sent an email to academic staff member Deb Rice demanding information regarding an independent study for a criminal justice student. The tone was used was unnecessarily accusatory and entirely unprofessional. I was kind of direct. I was pretty short. I said I needed information for an investigation that had to do with the accusation that I dumped my guests, actually, even though they were invited by the university, the German delegation on Dr.
Okay.
Dalecki. And I just asked her. I was kind of short. I was brief in that, mainly because she cussed me out over the phone. And I actually shared that with Dr. Dalecki, and I just went right to the point. I wasn't accusatory. I just asked her. I learned that she had a student that worked on the itinerary on fall, and asked whether that actually occurred and why that itinerary was never made available. It definitely showed that she worked on that itinerary too with a student, and she got credit for that, or a student got credit for it, and they made it look like I hawked that visit, and then that's why I needed that information. On October 16th, you threatened Dr. Patrick Sola, second-year assistant professor, with consequences to his potential tenure bid because he was displeased with his interpretation of his role as committee chair. And then on. And actually, he lied in an email to me. He said that we talked about the job description when we didn't. I have evidence that we didn't. He was actually ordered during that department meeting in August to solicit feedback from all department members about the job description for 3 faculty positions, and he didn't do so. He excluded me, and I contacted him and says, why did you exclude me? Why is this going on? As a tenured faculty member, I was not invited to be on the search of 3 new faculty members. And
so he didn't share that?
He did not share that.
With the department?
Correct. And okay. I have emails, I have evidence for that I made available. Dean Troop said in her deposition that that she never investigated my thing. So I was just basically told to shut up about it. And I did not say that I would, I did not threaten him, his tenure bid,
okay.
But I said that this is something that might come up and, you know, and it would be just, you know, maybe a little bump, but nothing big. But I certainly felt as a tenured faculty member, it is my duty to point out when he's in violation of policy, and he clearly violated policy in regard to the hiring procedures. It was wrong for you to threaten, And then number 7, on October 23rd, 2014, I learned that you had told students who wished to pass on a concern about Dr. Stegman to bypass the interim department chair because you said he was biased. Standard operating procedure provided that students should start with the department chair for any such concerns. It was wrong for you to tell students. The first thing is the student was concerned about going to Dr. Dalecki. Because she said that Dr. Dalecki was the mentor and was always hovering around Dr. Stegman, and they felt that student felt that the chair would be biased. I told her I was actually not comfortable when she came to me with some concerns about, I forgot what it was grading issues, I believe. I just thought, like, well, you know, you have student affairs you can go to. I mean, they are your liaison for any issues that you have. I did not see where there was a problem because student affairs are actually listed for problems that, you know, is a contact is contact office for students. I did not want to go at that time. Dr. Dalecki was on no speaking terms, and I have an email that was actually issued to me before that date, where he said that Dr. Troop and Councillor Lattice advised him against talking to me. So I did not have communication. I asked to sit down and talk about the problems we had. You know, basically just, you know, we got to sort this out. And he refused to talk to me. So because I was on speaking terms, I wasn't comfortable sending the student to that. And the student didn't want to talk to Dr. Dalecki anyway.
Okay.
She wrote, I also fear that you may have instigated the complaint against Dr. Stegman. She has no evidence for that. This is just her suspicion that she's acting. So if she accused me before of kind of doing things without, you know, basically without factual basis, it certainly is. And she actually acted on it. When you read out the directions, she directed me based on just a fear or something. And I did not instigate. The student came to me. I have the name of the student if you want to talk to her ever. I did not instigate. They came to me with a concern about...
So the student came to you asking for some alternatives, and then you provided them all.
Yeah, and actually, I have told students in my class, I always try to be, you know, informing my students of rights that they have, and I've said in class too, it's like, you know, with grading issues and a lot of things, you know, with due dates, you have to be strict, and, you know, then I take points off, and it's like, know that if you have ever an issue with anything with me, you know, you can always take it up with me. You know, you have the chair to go to. And I also mentioned repeatedly that student affairs are there for issues. So I've always felt comfortable kind of referring students to student affairs because the dean of Student Affairs mentioned that to me once, that, you know, we are in this kind of liaison right. position. She said, and Dr. Caywood always made clear that the chair of the department stands, he actually used the term as I'm there for my men, right? You know, he was very chauvinistic in this regard, but he meant basically everybody in the department, that the chair's job is to defend the faculty and the staff of the department. And that's why student affairs, on the other hand, then are there to advocate for the students. So I did not see that I did something wrong. So that certainly weren't such a harsh directive. And then there are certainly several directives here that basically said I cannot, if I have a problem, that I'm not supposed to articulate that. And
will actively work to resolve your complaints and issues at the most local level possible.
Correct.
Before assistance from the administration.
Yes.
So and basically working the system.
Working the system.
Just one second. Just before you start talking again, I'm just, maybe just because I'm on the phone, it's just, I'm trying to take notes, and it's just please make sure that you're enunciating and talking at a speed that human beings can type at.
Okay, I'll try my best. Sorry about that.
I take shorthand, and we have the tape too. So,
good. Yeah.
I know. That's my just trying to. My brain is just working so fast. I'm like, no, and I think Eric would need to understand. All right, sorry.
Got it.
Go ahead. You guys are going through the directive.
And the grievance hearing in 2013 that had to do with the chair selection, where the grievance committee actually said that Dean Troop violated policy when she appointed Dr. Dalecki. She said that I was unfit to be chair material because I could not handle my problems as Dr. Caywood after the student sexual harassment complaint on a local level. So, and then this directive again here in this letter, when I then tried to handle my problems just recently with Dr. Sola, I tried to do that. I tried to do it on a local level, and then I was reprimanded. So I actually went to him and I addressed, I tried to sort these things out with Dr. Sola, and I said, like, but look, the email here, and then he changed his story several times, and that's why I had the email as evidence to show that he was not truthful in his account.
Cease all email activity, groundless and unwarranted against Dr. Dalecki or other members of the university community.
Yes.
And you did that at that time?
Yes. And yeah, it was really hard because it said basically I have no, if something happens, I cannot articulate my concerns.
There were emails after this date, right?
There were certainly. I mean, I had email various issues, but I would have to go back to the account to kind of see what kind of emails there were.
Okay. All right.
Certainly, there was emails in regard to this letter of direction where I tried to get. I tried to address these issues. It was a disciplinary letter that was put in my file. By the way, that letter has been removed from my personnel folder. Also, I wrote a rebuttal that should be included, and that was taken out as well. And the dismissal letter of the complaint that Bryce filed is not included in my personnel folder.
So in your personnel folder, the letters of directive as well as your rebuttal were taken out.
Yes, and I have an email from Dr. Crawley that said, yes, it would be in my letter, in my personnel folder, as well as the rebuttal to they complained and the letter of direction of the chancellor, and they're not included. And so, and also like
did
another
request to have those removed.
No, never ever.
Okay.
No, and I had a letter of appreciation from the chancellor that was issued in spring of 2012, and that letter was taken out as well.
So that's not in your P file.
No, but I have it.
All right. You will henceforth treat your colleagues in Criminal Justice Department with respect and keep your comments about them to the appropriate arena.
Yeah.
The fourth is apologizing to Dr. Soler regarding his progress towards tenure. And You had talked about that. And,
yeah, and that's why I recorded it. Because of that letter, I recorded the meeting to protect myself.
Okay.
Now, the interesting thing is the directive, these, you know, I feel really here treated differently because in one of the restaurants here, there were statements made about me, which is obviously a public forum for example, that I have a mental illness, that I will get fired, and at the meeting was attended by students. That student made a declaration, a sworn declaration. HR Director Lohmann did an investigation on that, and he said, in fact, that Deb Rice made inappropriate statements in that public forum, and she did not deny it. And she, when he asked her whether, I asked John Lohmann that I need an apology for that, and that is especially problematic because she made statements in front of students, and students commented on that, including that I would get fired, and. She told him hell no to the request of apologizing. So that directive was only issued, I really feel, singled out. And Dean Troop actually was made aware of those statements, and she told Lohmann that, and I have evidence of that too, that the complaint, that issue with Deb Rice has to go forward. Yet at the deposition, Deb Rice said that she's never been reprimanded. And in fact, a student who revealed that information, his graduate assistantship position was terminated. Following
that.
Audio recording.
Audio recording.
And he made that. I did not know about that when he made it.
Okay,
he made
so you didn't know about that. That was one of the questions I wanted to ask a little bit later. But thank you for.
We did talk about in classes, you know, things about recordings have come up in regard to, you know, when police records or then when it came to litigation stuff, and we talked about one party, two party consent states. So students are informed about the legal implications of recordings.
All right. So.